Family Bones is a graphic novel based on the true story of the oldest married couple on Missouri's death row, Ray and Faye Copeland, as experienced one summer by their unwitting nephew. The writer, Sean Granger, is the actual great-nephew of Ray Copeland, and deftly blends his own experiences with those that he's gleaned from the rest of the family into one very horrible tale. Family Bones is a true coming-of-age American Gothic. The fish-out-of-water city boy fights to survive a summer on the family farm with a pair of serial killers. Sean is trapped on the Copeland farm, a slave for his uncle. The heat simmers his skin to a full boil until the neighbor's beautiful daughter appears. Wendy quickly becomes his hope, desire, and fear, not to mention his one trusted friend. Together, they discover each other and some very bloody family secrets. Pick up Family Bones today, available everywhere. More at familybones.kingtractorpress.com.
Now broadcasting the webcomic Beacon.
Is that a thing? Because I'm on the page.
It's on YouStream.
I just tweeted it. Otherwise, it's webcastbeacon.com/live is the quick link. It has an embedded YouStream as well as a link.
Okay.
And with that, this is episode 207 of the Webcomic Beacon podcast here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007 with webcomics, comic news, tropes, web fiction, and now a brand new video series called First Issue, in which myself, Melissa Kircher, and Marcus A, review print comic books and see whether or not they succeed or fail as a first issue. You check that out at firstissue.webcomicbeacon.com. We have 8 episodes up presently, starting with the DC Comics New 52. There's only 8 up, and I have another 10 recorded, and we're going to record another 11 today. Because I underestimated how long it takes to edit video. We are hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetworks.com. I'm Fess of... Don't bother. And with us we have Tanya Higgins of daisiesandshitproductions.com.
Hello, hello.
And Mark Savory of autumnlake.com.
Well, hello there.
This week... Well, we're still here. The rapture didn't happen.
No rapture, huh?
Well, actually, it kind of happened. It attacked Dreamhost for like half the day, and our website was down. But it came back, so that's cool.
Well, I didn't see any rapturing going on. I didn't see no naked bodies floating around, so I was a little disappointed. But then I thought, well, okay, at least I'm not naked floating around scaring the neighbors, so it worked out.
Well, it is close to Halloween, though.
Right. Are you going to dress up as a raptured soul or something? How it's going to work?
They call me the Streak.
I'm pretty sure we would have noticed all the dead walking.
Yeah, you just go around naked. Say you were born yesterday.
Yeah.
Dum-dum.
Just saying. Yeah. All the dead were supposed to be unearthed from their graves, the sinners to be mocked.
Sounds like Halloween
and
so far.
Scorned.
Oh.
And
yeah, it's just
the
all the Christians, all the raptured Christians will stand around pointing at the sinners.
Well, no, because they go up and it's shamed before God. See, when the bodies are so they'd be shamed before God, and then all the good people would be reunited with their bodies.
Mm.
Where does Zeus fit into this?
Doesn't.
Oh.
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Right. And oddly enough, this is why some rapture believers are against organ donation. Their fear is that if they donate their organs when they die, when the rapture occurs, their organs will be reunited with their bodies, and they would be the responsible then for the deaths.
Slight Egyptian spin on this whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
These other people who were walking around with their organs.
Well, then if that happened, they'd be responsible for murder. Couldn't go to heaven.
Well, no, they'd still get to go.
No. I think...
You need to read your Bible. I'm sorry. But you can be all kinds of a murderer. It doesn't matter as long as you have Jesus in your heart.
Fine. Well, there's only one unforgivable sin, apparently.
Yes, that's grieving the Holy Spirit.
Yep. There's this... Oh, you... I probably mentioned it before, but there's this independent video movie that somebody made, and you should... It's like a Creative Commons, I think, so you could find it somewhere online and download it and not worry about
it. On YouTube.
It's called The God Who Wasn't There.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Oh, you guys seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. I remember when it came out and you had all these YouTube responses to it.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very interesting. Like, just using, you got all the evidence in the book right there. You just point out the flaws. But
Well, the interesting one to me was the guy who responded and said, "What is there for a God to do? He's made the universe. It's running fine. I mean, what's he got to do?" You know, he said it a lot better than me, though.
Well, but I mean,
what's he got left for him to do? He's made the humans. He's made the galaxy there. Get the planet spinning around.
Depends on the sort of God you believe in. I mean, there's plenty of believers out there that think that God spends all of his time warping the laws of physics to, heal their dog. So,
speaking of which, there's this really awesome video on YouTube. I mean, it's like whether or not you're religious or believe in God or whatever, I probably mentioned this before, but it's still a really awesome put together video. There is no words. Well, there's like Moomarines or whatever, because there's like people around everywhere, but there's like no dialogue that's like in there. It's all music, and it says, as if God was a DJ.
Okay.
God was a DJ.
Yeah, God comes down because something happened. So he comes down and he sets up his, DJ records and everything. Just he has this whole thing set up. And there's this scene in front of him. And he basically remixes the scene, rewinds time, remixes the scene so whatever didn't happen. But it takes him like 3 tries. Because he really, really screws up with one of them, or something else bad happens, so then he, like, goes back. No. It's a really awesome video.
But he's not supposed to make mistakes, though.
Yeah, infallibility.
Well, that's because...
Which is kind of doesn't make sense.
He rewind and redid it until he got it right. And then he packed up and left really quick before something else happened. But so he didn't have to, because he saw more happen, so he had to fix that too. But it's really cool video, regardless of your belief system. It's really well put together video and very interesting. I liked it a lot. Anyway, this episode is not about God.
It's not.
No.
But it is about conventions, and more so about the business aspect of doing a convention.
Oh boy.
I believe heavily borrowing from, or mostly using, a guide that Jenny Breeden has from thedevilpanties.com, who has been engaged. So congratulations to Jenny Breeden. Yay.
I'm sorry. That's the most I can muster for weddings and engagements.
Yay.
Golf clap. I didn't like it.
This is where I hand off the show to Tanya Higgins.
Me?
You?
Hooray. Oh boy. Gee, it's gonna be an interesting show here.
I'm gonna concur with Fest that everyone should go and read Jenny Breeden's it's a 3-year guide basically to convention going, and assuming your stuff doesn't suck, and that's pretty much going to be the caveat for the entire
show.
That
lets me out.
It's not true. Your stuff does not suck. Assuming your stuff doesn't suck, if you follow that guide, you have a really decent chance of earning a profit in that third year. It's really, really unusual that people go out to their first convention and turn a profit. It's not unheard of that you'll break even, but it's pretty unusual to earn a profit in the first or second year. So starting with a long-term plan is pretty much the golden rule for any sort of business venture. Flying by the seat of your pants is a great way to lose a lot of money.
That's me a lot.
I was going to say, there's both of you, actually. trial and error is a great way to learn. It really, really is. But it's an expensive way to learn. And if you don't have, you know, money to be throwing away, you're better off learning from people who've kind of been there and done that. And so start with Jenny Breeden's guide. She talks a lot about, you know, that first year, staying close to home, doing a lot of room sharing. I think probably my favorite little tip, one that I still use regardless of where I'm going, is bring your own food. Convention food is unbelievably expensive. Even the stuff that they kind of like offer to people at tables, you know, you're paying $6-7 for a sandwich. And oftentimes the food can be the difference between making a profit or breaking even. And
unless there's a con suite, you know.
Unless there's a con suite. Well, yeah, and she does also say, you know, make liberal use of the con suite if there's one available. And I always like to recommend that if you're going to eat, if you're going to be grazing the con suite for the entire convention, that donating a couple of hours is the least you can do for eating all their food all weekend long. But
I'll need to get a link to this convention guide. I can't seem to find it off her site.
It's in the FAQ.
All right, I'll take a look and try to find the link.
I hope she didn't take it down, because it's awesome. It needs to be there. let's see. Where do we want to start? Do we want to start with boring things like taxes? Or do we want to start with, like, what to bring and how to bring it?
Well, let's start with picking the con that's right for you.
Oh.
Like decide which one you want to go to, or let's talk about where do you start? Do you start with figuring out what product you want to create to bring?
Oh, no. Never start with what you're selling, in my opinion. There are people, I'm sure, that will disagree with me. But I, as far as webcomics go, and since that's the show, that's kind of what we're dealing with, you are your biggest product. And if you're thinking, okay, here's my merchandise line, where does my merchandise fit? You're kind of hoping to lose money. It's a lot easier to learn everything you can about a convention once you've decided to go there. We'll get that in a minute. But learn everything you can about the convention. Talk to other dealers. Talk to people who've been there before. Mm-hmm. Find out what sold really well. Find out what didn't. If there's like a theme to the convention or something special going on that year, you might be able to commemorate those kind of things. It's a lot easier to tailor your merchandise to the convention than it is the other way around, trying to find conventions to match whatever you've come up with.
But obviously, if you have a webcomic, mm-hmm. there's still at least one piece of merchandise you should have, and I'm going to guess anyway, and okay. That should be at least one printed issue of your comic, correct?
Well, what do you mean by issue?
Well, like something.
You need to have something that represents the comic, absolutely, or there's no reason for you to go. You're not pitching yourself. Conventions hold two purposes. One, obviously, is to make some money. We like money.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we all do.
It helps us eat. but beyond that, you're advertising yourself and you're advertising your product. And so if you don't have anything of your comic there, there's no point in being there. You might as well be in the merchant room selling random T-shirts and that kind of thing. Because you're not really representing then as an artist. You're just representing as a merchant. And that doesn't make any sense for us. So yeah, you should have, if you're not selling prints of your comic for whatever reason, at the very least, you should have a book that has, you know, printouts of your comics in it. Something that people can take away that has your URL. Try to make those things entertaining. Business cards don't work. Everybody needs to have them, but most business cards that you hand out are going to get thrown away. What happens is they end up in the bottom of the big merch bag that everybody leaves the convention with, and it sits in the corner after all the cool shit's been taken out, and 3 months later, it's kind of pawed through and then tossed in the bin. And that's where business cards go. Business cards usually die in a bin. However, if you can come up with something that's funny and clever, something that people want to tack on a corkboard, Jenny Breeden, for example, suggests printing out one of your comics and, you know, putting the URL on that kind of flyer style. Those kind of things are much more likely to be kept long enough for them to actually go to your site than just a business card.
I know somebody who, which comic? He does a comic called Business Casual. And what he does is he basically prints out a comic on like a postcard and has mm-hmm. that as his card. Yes, it's a little bit more costly, but like say the cost per click, so to speak, is probably yeah. is probably better than the business cards.
Do you want your money to wind up on a cork board or do you want your money to wind up in the bin?
Right, right. But I still think that like the people that you engage, mm-hmm. that people that do ask, where can I go for this or that, or the ones actually you do have a conversation with and then you get them a business card or two, you know, those are the ones that are more likely going to keep that card and check out that site when they yeah. get home.
Because and even then, make it as easy as possible. I'm a big fan now of putting the little Q codes on business cards that link directly to an RSS feed. A lot of people have RSS feed readers on their smartphones. If they can snap that with a QR reader, and it automatically adds your comic to their web feed, you're golden. You're already in their feed. You're already on their daily list. And it, you know, it took half a second. So anything that makes it really easy for people to utilize that information is going to even be better. But yeah, if you make a connection with somebody, and that's, I go back to your main product. If you make a connection with somebody and they like you and they care about what you're doing, yeah, they're more likely to use that business card. Which is why everybody should have business cards. But the reality is most of them are going to go into the bin, which is why you should never spend huge amounts of money on business cards. There's just no point in it.
No, but and honestly, the best business cards that I've come across for the most for your buck has got to be at gotprint.com. That's where I've printed all my very good cards, very nice looking cards. You can get 1,000 for maybe $30 or something like that.
Vistaprint's cheaper.
Vistaprint's cards are shit.
Most of them are going to end up in the trash. Does it really matter? And that's kind of one of the things that people need to think about. Mm. If it's going to be thrown away, does it really matter that you paid a little bit extra for super heavy cardstock? And there are upgrades at Vistaprint. You can upgrade to a different cardstock. I look at business cards as actually less valuable than flyers. If I wouldn't spend that much on flyers, I won't spend it on business cards. Because like I said, most of them are going to end up in the trash, and it doesn't matter what kind of cardstock it was on. If it was shiny and thick and pretty and in the trash, still not doing you any good. So, meh, I'm not going to spend. Whenever possible, I get my business cards for free.
You make a valid point. Gotprint also does postcards really cheaply too.
And there you go. I will say that postcards are difficult to get people to take. I'm not sure why. It's been suggested that maybe people artificially inflate their value. They think that you spent a lot of money on them, so they don't want to take it unless they're sure they're going to use it. It could be that the size is one that doesn't just stick in your pocket. There are now business cards, like three-fold business cards, that you could actually put, you know, like a single panel comic on the inside, but then it folds up so that they could still stick it in their pocket. I don't know if it's worth the money because there hasn't been enough, I guess, market research. With webcomicers, I haven't really seen it utilized very well. But things like that might be a possibility. I don't know why it's so hard to get people to take postcards, but it is. I mean, we've all sat with big stacks of shiny, pretty postcards. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Ryan Dow, who does Introspective Comics, and the other guy I mentioned, they both do that. And I've sat next to both of them at different conventions, and they usually have to say, yeah, you can totally take one of these. So at least it gets, I mean, in that way it can get picked up. Like, especially if they're like walking away, and it's like, at least, like, it's almost as though, because there's like a comic, there's like a thing on there that they can have. Yeah. It's almost like a consolation prize for not buying anything.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, if you're doing postcards, if you have bags, you know, maybe that you're using to package merchandise for people, it should go in every bag. If you're selling prints and, you know, you've got those boarded and bagged, you should put a postcard in there. Not only because it's a way to get rid of the inevitable 500 that you bought, but it is a way to make sure that people have that link. So that if somebody comes across and they don't really know your comic, but they really love that t-shirt, they grab the t-shirt, they also get that plug to your comic. So, you know, you can maybe make a return customer out of them. I know this sounds so callous. It's all, this is not the artsy, I do it because I love it show.
Yeah,
I would like to eat this month's show.
So, that's the thing.
But
you know,
going back to picking a convention, this is the thing I see people screw up more than anything else. You know, the horror stories I've heard have been from. Oh, hold on a second.
That's why.
What happened?
I sent you a text so that I wouldn't interrupt you.
Well, it, like, screwed everything up, and now I can't find it. Sorry.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick...
I foiled your plan!
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how to pick that convention. Because Tanya can't seamlessly check a text while talking at the same time, and that's fine, you know? And we'll be right back.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network, and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
A weird thing happened. Like, everything blinked, and the windows shrunk, and I couldn't find it. I was like, what the freak happened? This is what happens when you upgrade Skype.
We don't upgrade it anymore. They make us.
Aw.
Fuckers.
That's rude. All right. I have it back now so that I can see the text messages.
Yes.
And be seamless.
So, Tanya.
Yeah.
How do you go about picking a convention?
I go about it in a lot more protracted manner than is possibly necessary. I personally like to go to conventions first just as an attendee before I consider having a booth, especially if I'm going to be flying solo. I've never actually flown solo at a convention that I hadn't attended in the past. That's just a really good way to lose money, to show up blind to a convention and have no idea what it's going to be like. Most people I know don't go to that extent. At the very least, if you're considering, it depends on where it is. If it's within, you know, car distance, you're not going to miss work, you're not going to do all that kind of thing, you don't have to be quite as stringent with checking out the convention. You should still ask around. Find people who went the year before and the year before that. Find out what kind of things sold, what didn't sell, and specifically find out who sold and who didn't. There are conventions where, you know, sci-fi comics don't sell, which seems to throw a lot of people. They kind of assume that since most conventions, you know, most of the big conventions sort of have a sci-fi theme, that they'll be fine at whatever convention they go to. And I've seen conventions where, you know, the sci-fi comics and things were sort of sitting there at empty tables going, what the hell? So find out who goes year after year after year. Take a look at the guest list for past years for the convention has been the most helpful to me. And those names that pop up more than once, I compare my work to their work. And
you're talking the guest list, right?
The guest list, right. Yeah. Well, and just really people who had tables. It's not necessarily people that the convention invited, but just people who have tables at that convention every year, you know, for 2 or 3 years. If your comic and their comic are nothing alike, you might want to think twice about it. But it's a good way to gauge the audience. You also want to look at least in my case, you want to look at the rules for the convention. Some conventions are, in my opinion, overly child-friendly, and anything that is, you know, smacks at all of adult material in any way, shape, or form, even suggestively, you have to keep under the table, which is pointless. You can't sell anything that's under the table. So, you know, check and make sure that there aren't bizarre content restrictions. Make an accurate assessment of what your costs are going to be if you're going out of state. Don't wing it. Like, find out exactly how much the hotel room is. Know exactly who's going to, you know, if you can get room shares, who's going to be there. Don't take the I might show up as, you know, as a solid. If you can't afford that.
You can't depend on that.
No. And it's not unless you can afford it. If you can afford to have the room by yourself and, you know, the additional rent would be nice, then fine. But otherwise,
and also you don't have to stay at the hotel.
No, you'd not.
I've stayed at Motel 6s before.
Yeah.
That are quite affordable. And this is if you're driving. And then I drive a few miles to the convention.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of conventions, actually, you know, the hotels tend to cluster together in little herds. So a lot of times the hotels are within walking distance. And as long as you have a room that is locked, a lot of conventions, the dealer's room and artist alley rooms can be locked so that you don't have to take your stuff up to your room every night. If that's the case, walking to a hotel is not going to be an issue. Even then, get a trolley, for bloody hell. Like, if it works for toddlers, you can walk trolley, a block.
Yeah, do search for trolley, hand truck as well.
yeah.
You know, those are the search. I couldn't figure out what the hell they were called when I was looking for one. It's like, what the fuck is it called? Trolley? No, and I was getting weird results. And wheelbarrow? Not really a wheelbarrow. It's a hand truck. I finally came across hand truck after like an hour.
Keep in mind that anything you're using to transport your stuff from another hotel to the hotel where you actually have your table has to be stored at your table. So if you're, you know, running around in a friggin' wagon, you know, like a toddler wagon, that's going to be hard to stow under your table. And if you're sharing your table, people will be pissed at you. I've found that the space on top of the table is a lot less contentious than the space underneath. You get a lot more sort of bickery fights when you're sharing a table with somebody who's a table slob and they have 18 boxes and they're all stuffed sort of haphazardly under the table. That's rude.
Especially if you're pulling them out constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That little foldy-up dolly thing that you found is pretty cool, Fess, because it, like, collapses.
Well, it actually doesn't.
Doesn't it? I mean,
it can convert to a four-wheel cart or a hand truck. It doesn't really collapse very well. It basically, if you put it in like behind the driver's seat, like in like the foot thing, for the person in the back, it can fit just fine, like right there. If you want a condensed space, but also the thing is, the one that I got can also handle up to 400 pounds. I probably don't need that much. I probably bought more than I needed, but it's sturdy.
This goes to reasonable estimations.
Well, then again, I also bring a ton of stuff to conventions because I drive, so I can bring a ton of stuff. Speaking of which, Mark, I think I'm going to have to downsell your shirts even more to get rid of them. No offense, unless you want to pick them up next time. I need to whittle down how much I came to the. Oh, this is very relative. I came to the realization two conventions ago that I looked at my table. I'm doing something very, very wrong. This is very relative. I started going to conventions as I had the Webcomic Beacon, and I had, you know, my webcomics, and I didn't really have anything, you know, I just had webcomics. So I was basically just promoting everything. I was promoting Jenny Everywhere. I didn't really have anything to sell. Mm-hmm. And then I started amassing favors. Yeah, I'll put your book on my table. I don't have anything, you know. Yeah, I'll put, you know, I look at my table. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different things that are not mine. Well, I do keep the money for the Jenny Everywhere When Casting Calls book, that basically goes into convention funds or buying more of those books. I published it. I got it printed. And I basically have permission to keep the profits from it. And it just rolls back into itself, so it's fine. And also I have some stuff that I'm reselling, essentially, that yeah. I keep the profits on. But I was like, looking at it, it's like, you know what? I gotta stop doing favors. No offense to these people. But it's just, it's too...
You're the only one that sold any of my shirts, I think.
It's too much other stuff.
You've sold more of them than I have, I think.
Oh, I also sold another shirt. At the last convention, somebody bought one of the shirts, so I owe you $10.
Oh, okay. Note to self.
Yeah. I've actually had to reduce all my shirts down because nobody's buying them. I think I might just give them away to some friends just to get the freaking rid of them, because they're basically, right now, they're at cost, and I'm probably going to have to go below cost just to get rid of them.
You actually bring up two mistakes that people make. One is mostly populating your table with other people's stuff. You're actually the only person I know that does that. I've never seen anybody else that only has other people's stuff. I've done it at PenguinCon, but that's because I really just go to PenguinCon. I haven't really acted as a dealer. While I've been at PenguinCon in the past, that'll probably change this year, but it'll have to. The other thing is getting more space than you need. If you have room to fill your space with other people's things, you should be sharing that table with 2, 3, 4 other people. There's no reason for you to pay the table fee for an entire table at most conventions. I've only seen, I think, one convention where they forced every artist to get a table, and it failed miserably, because, you know, we're not going to do that. At the most, you know, usually you can get one person to share a table with. But if you don't have, you know, if you're only going to take up a third of the table, then get two other people to share the table with you, or get somebody that can fill up 2/3 of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get your own table if you've got room for other people's stuff. You've just wasted a lot of money.
Also, do keep in mind about what the size of the tables that are available. Convention tables will run usually between 6 and 8 feet, and there's a big difference between that extra 2 feet.
it's true.
Yes.
Yeah. Look at the square footage of the table. Do a little bit of math.
Well, most tables are going to be 1.5 to 2 feet deep. I don't think the table, you know, front to back varies that greatly. I mean, I think that's a fairly standard size. I'd be hard pressed to find a table that's going to be shorter than 2 feet.
Those aren't tables. That usually when you get the when you get your application, or when you get your request for a table, it'll tell you the dimensions of the table. It won't just say how long they are. And if it does say how long they are, ask them. Say, how deep is the table too? And they should get you that information fairly easily. Other than that, you can kind of assume standard. You should be able to have your display. You should have your display planned in such a way that you can take up, you know, 1/3 of the table, just as compact as you can get it, or that you can spread it out at half a table and still make it look decent. That way you're not freaking out with every new convention, you know, configuration that you've come up with. It doesn't matter if you're sharing a table with one person or if you're sharing it with three people, you're still going to be able to have your display the way it needs to be. Every shirt that you sell does not need to be spread out on the table. That's not necessary. If you have a wall behind you, utilize it. If you don't have a wall behind you, you can use books for t-shirts the same way you use books for prints, three-week binder type books. All of those things can be done in a number of ways. I'm a big fan of those little plastic magazine racks and things like you find at doctor's offices and trade conventions. You can get them really cheap, and it gives you verticality, which not only makes your table look more professional, but it also means that you can condense it down. Big stacks of comic books, not attractive. People don't buy them. The better and more professionally you have your display set up, the more people are willing to buy from you. They assume that there's quality there. It's a faulty assumption in many cases. But the more professional the display looks, the more people are likely to assume that it's worth buying.
Okay, I got a question on displaying then. The whole thing about whether or not you have, it's like if people have like their printed books, they usually have like a stack of like, they have like, a couple of different stacks, like maybe three or five, depending on how thick they are. Laying down or propped up in a little book holder, or sometimes they're laying down with one propped up in a book holder on top of it. What's kind of like your thoughts on how you should have your comic books on your table presented? We're assuming basically like say the minimal sort of merch. You got comic books on your table.
I'm sorry, Fez. You said book holder, and all I could think of was the general from Hogan's Heroes. General Burkhalter.
Wow.
Sorry.
Okay. It's a pull from
I just couldn't get it out of my head. I had to say it.
I pity the fool.
A lot of it is going to depend on how much space you have, obviously. You don't want to make it look like you don't have enough merch to fill your space, which is another reason that if you don't have that much, you should be sharing tables with other people. So, a lot of whether or not you have a stack of books there as well as the one that's in the little vertical holder is going to depend on how much space you have. I've been to conventions where it was cramped enough that I didn't have room to put them on the table. But personally, I prefer having one in a stand and then in front of it keeping five or six, like either in front or immediately behind the stand where they can be seen. Do not, under any circumstance, take every freaking comic you've printed and put them behind the stack to show people. Like, I think the urge is to show them, hey, I have got so many, I can fill everybody's orders. What it really looks like is, hey, nobody buys my stuff. So, keep most of your stock under the table, five or six out. That gives people the impression that you might sell out. And so if they're going to buy your stuff, they better buy it now.
Okay, you were talking about, like, if you have, like, 50 books of, say, book one, don't put all 50. I was thinking that you were maybe, if you had, like book one, book two, book three, book four.
Have a representative sampling of everything you have, to sell. But don't leave your entire stock of each comic on the table.
Right, okay.
Because it makes it look like nobody's buying anything. And it also gives the impression that there's no hurry. If they come back at the end of the con, they can still buy your stuff. And, they're not going to remember to come back. Nobody ever does.
Even the ones that say they'll come back.
Yeah, they usually don't.
Yeah. There is, here's the other thing about the versus the prop versus on the table. I wasn't sure. Some people have been saying is like, well, people don't like to grab from the stand. It's what some people told me, and it's like I would have like I'd have like maybe three or four comic books sitting in the stand because I used to put them all up on stands, but when you have nine different things, it looks kind of cruddy. So
here's what I do: all the comics, print comics that I'm actually going to sell, that I'm going to hand to people, are bagged and boarded automatically. I also bag and board my shirts, because it makes them easier for me to find the right size. If you label everything and bag and board it, you just get the magazine bags and boards instead of the comic size. You can put even extra, extra, extra large shirts in there, and you can find them quickly under your table and hand them, the deal, but always have one out so that they can look at the actual t-shirt quality. But what I do is the one that is sitting vertically, I leave out, and I put a big old sticker on it that says, take a look. That way people are going to manhandle it. They understand that, like, that's the sample version, and they can look through it and decide whether or not they want to buy it. And then the rest of them are bagged and boarded, so I don't have to worry about people spilling crap on it and touching them with their nasty fingers. I refer to my take a look copy as the germ copy. Because that's the one everybody touches. So I have one germ copy, and then the other ones are, like, hermetically sealed.
A con crud copy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, read the comic for free, catch some con crud.
That's the one I burn at the end of every convention.
Serve you right for not buying nothing.
The problem with how I do my conventions, or how I did, except one more. I'm going to do one more, how I've always done it, because I don't have anything to sell yet. Next year will be different. It will be different. All the different books at my table, it looks like a clusterfuck. There's no central theme. There's too many different things. And I had to start with I didn't do any of these because people ask, well, what did you do? And it's like, well, then I give them business cards. Well, I have a webcomic and I have podcasts. I don't even know how to properly sell a podcast unless I burn, like, some episode to a disc to give people. It's like I'm a unique situation, I'm sure. I mean, most people, I don't think, go to a comic convention peddling a podcast.
Yeah, some people do. There's a couple, the Mile High podcast out here, they do conventions just as the podcast. What it comes down to, no matter what it is you're selling, no matter what your product is, you know, comic, podcast, whatever else you're pimping, you need to have a 10-second explanation. You have 10 to 15 seconds to grab somebody when somebody says, hey, what is your comic about? Don't start in with, well, you see, it's kind of like, well, you know how when you were in college, did you go to college? Or like when your friends were in college, stop it. You've already lost them. They're bored. If they're bored by your pitch, they're bored by your comic. Like, that's the assumption. So have 30 seconds. You know, 30 seconds, 10 seconds. You need to be able to explain your comic or your podcast or whatever it is, in soundbite fashion. One thing that I think Jenny Breeden is really good at is she seems to have several little sound bites prepared, and she sizes up the person really quickly. If they're wearing a LARPing shirt, she can say, oh, you should check out this, and it's about LARPing and you'll love it. Or, you know, so if you can kind of tailor it to whatever fandom they're sporting, all the power to you. But if not, just have something short and entertaining that gives a good enough description to hook people. It doesn't have to be detailed and perfect. They're either going to check it out or they're not. And talking more won't make them more likely to check it out. It'll make them less likely in many cases. You just need to find something entertaining about the podcast. 10 seconds. Hey, I do this great podcast. We talk about webcomics, give all kinds of tips. You should check it out. Business card, done. They're either with you or they're not. You got me off the track now. Now I'm talking about podcasts.
Podcasts! Oh, man, what the hell? Google my safe searches. Okay, now it's off. Ooh. Anyway, sorry.
I mentioned actually really quick the way I sell my shirts. This is one that I came to by both trial and error and after a horrible experience running someone else's merch. I think that anybody who's helped out at conventions has wound up running a booth for somebody for a couple of hours where all of their shirts are piled into a box that's obviously been rifled through at the last 6 conventions. You have no idea what sizes are left. You have no idea, you know, all the designs are in one big ass box and it's just a heap. It looks like it's laundry day in there. And it takes you 5 minutes to find anything it sucks. You lose customers that way, and it's a pain in the ass. And that's when I started bagging and boarding my shirts. You fold it over just like they do little shirts that you get at JCPenney, you know, your nice little button-ups. You just fold it over the board, put it in the bag, tape it up, and I use color-coded stickers with the just little round stickers like they sell for garage sales, and I write the sizes on it. And then I file them. I put them in one of those foldable cardboard file boxes you get at any office store with little dividers that tells me the design. So I can immediately grab the design and the size without having to mess with it at all.
Right.
And all those boxes you just fold up and put in your luggage on top of the actual shirts that you're selling if you're going out of state. And it all fits really compactly and nicely. And then you just set it up in your room before you go down to the convention. It saves a lot of time. You can also, if you're using a book to show the different designs that you have in t-shirts, you can put stickers of the sizes on it so that when you run out of a size, you just pull the sticker off that page. People know you don't have that size. You don't have to answer, you know, do you have a medium for the rest of your con experience? It's there.
I think that's a good idea.
A lot of times it's all about time. People don't like to stand around and wait. And if it's taking you 10 minutes to deal with one customer, they're going to keep walking. But if they're getting the impression that you're pumping things out, then they're more likely to stand around for another 30, 40 seconds, you know, waiting for you to get them.
And speaking of time, it is time to do one more break. And when we come back, we'll be back.
Yes.
The cost of living's rising, and it really is surprising. My boss came in to me today, said he's gonna raise my pay. But that would have been okay about a year ago today. My dad's a money lender, but I'm a money spender. He won't give a cent or dime, says I'm much too bent on crime. Spending is my greatest sin, should bank the lot and be like him. I need paper money, billions, trillions, sweet as honey. Banknotes piled up to the sky, spend the lot before I die. The wheel is always spinning, but someone else is winning. The cards just never fall my way. The losing hand I seem to play. The gambling is my favorite vice. My fingers twitch when I see dice.
That was The Cost of Living by Miss Ludella Black, found at musicgallery.com by Mevio.
Obvious best is obvious.
Well, sometimes, you know, it isn't. It isn't that obvious.
No. It's like the most boring show ever. There's no jokes in here.
Well, it's a good show, but it's not entertaining. So, yeah. I'm going to take my pants off.
Hey!
Just kidding.
I've been naked the whole show. Nobody's complained so far.
All right, well,
who would
turn
complain
on your,
about that?
Turn on your video. You're not here. Turn on your video, and I'll pump it through the Ustream.
And yet, no.
Okay.
That's a definite no. Nobody wants to see that.
I don't know. We'll take a poll. Anyway. Let's see if there's any sort of news that I have to go over for the Webcast Speaking Network website. I don't really think so, other than I guess to tell people that the Tropecast is back. They had a couple of Tropecasts. They're looking to record on like Saturday evenings, I think they're actually going to record tonight, though, because they couldn't get yesterday. So it sounds like they're going to be going every other week. So people who are interested in the Tropecast, it is back at thetropecast.com. I think we have the horror episode as this week's featured episode. So go ahead and check that out as they talk about horror tropes. And they have John Jay from Adult Swim Central and Adventure Club Podcast. So it's kind of a cool episode. That has to be right. I think that's right. It should be right. Anyway. Also, check out the Webcomic Beacon newscast for weekly news and recaps of things that happen in the industry that are relative to comic creation and digital distribution. And very, very informative. And, you know, Ross Scott, Alex Heberling, Ross Scott usually brings in some cool guest. Eric Kimball does all the news searching. If you like the Webcomic Beacon and would like a little bit more of that sort of news meat, the more timely stuff, things that are happening now, you should check that out at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. And of course, if you're new to the Webcomic Beacon, check out the archive. We do have all the shows, all the past 206 shows in a massive archive for you to check out. A lot of really test of time episodes. We've done a lot of topics, a lot of looks at genres, guests, interviews. So go ahead and check out the archives. You can check out links to all the shows and their archives at webcastbeacon.com/shows for more information. And so Tanya.
So Fess.
Conventions. Or cons, if you will.
It's a lot easier to say. Are there questions? Like, what do you want?
I don't know. Let's see here.
We have like two people in the chat room.
We do have like two people. It's a Sunday. It's a Sunday morning. People are tired. People are cranky.
And it is right before Halloween, so.
Oh, sorry.
It's not right. That's next week. Next week we're going to have
some of us gear up earlier.
Next week we're going to have Riley, Dave Chabet, if I'm saying that correctly, who does Dead Winter. So that's going to be really awesome. I should probably email him and just, you know, a reminder. Email Riley.
It's writing a reminder to send a reminder.
Yes. Well, one's for me and the other one's for him. You're so crazy.
There is one thing I suppose I should mention. That is really not amusing at all, and it's something that unfortunately everybody's going to have to do their own research on. Just because you're at a convention doesn't mean you don't have to pay taxes. For a lot of webcomicers who've been selling online, they're used to not having to pay sales tax because, you know, internet sales, you don't pay sales tax. That is not the case with conventions. In the state of Colorado, I get what's called a multiple event license. And every year that I apply, you start with the first convention you're going to, you put that down, you put other planned conventions, all that stuff, you pay your fee, and then, you know, that gives you the right to sell and collect sales tax for the state of Colorado.
Oh, that's weird.
No, it's awesome. It works really well.
No, that's different from what happens here. Basically, I get a business number, a tax number.
EIN.
And I can pay quarterly, in which basically they would get quarters, honestly, from me. or I can pay at the end of the year, I think.
It's the same way. I still pay my taxes the same way. This is just the sales license.
Oh, I don't have a sales license.
Really?
I have a tax number and I pay the tax that I should be paying.
Well, then you're going to find it interesting. Some states actually do not allow you to sell unless you have at events, unless you have a sales license in your state.
I didn't even see anything like that.
And, well, it depends on where you're selling. California, I know, doubles so that not only do I have to pay my Colorado sales tax on anything I sell in California, you also have to pay California sales tax at any event that's in California. At least that's the way it was the last time I was there. I don't know if things have changed. But you need to look into the local tax law. Look into your state's tax law. And in some cases, the county tax laws. It's a real drag to get a letter at some point in the year, you know, because somewhere around, you know, along the way, you didn't pay the taxes you need to pay. With that, you do have to keep track of what you buy, what you sell. For a lot of states, the sales license is only necessary if you're going to be reselling. So like if you go to Costco or whatever and buy a big old thing of, you know, Pocky, and you want to sell Pocky at your table, then you have to have a resale license for that. My event license covers the resale license. So look into your state tax and sales codes so you don't get yourself in trouble selling things. That's all.
It's very, very Minnesota. I don't know. I'm really confused about a lot of the stuff. I guess it was not easy for me to find some of this stuff. I believe I'm doing everything correctly.
You can call or show up at the offices. Secretary of State.
They have hours. I thought they would go to the Commerce or something, but I guess it's Secretary of State. Okay.
Yeah, the Secretary of State office usually has a bunch of different divisions, and then it's going to be one of those divisions that they send you to. But they're going to have the information, or at least where you need to go to get the information, so that you know that you're following the laws. I'm not a fan of California. It was a mess. But
California.
What?
California.
Yeah, California was a mess for me. I don't know why. I made it easier.
California is a mess.
Sometimes, yeah, in some ways.
Their economy is a mess.
Their economy is a mess, and maybe that's why they wanted sales tax for me as well. Mm-hmm, but they didn't get a whole lot of it because I didn't sell much that weekend. Yeah, it was. It's just one of the most of the time, I haven't had to pay the double tax kind of thing. Most conventions, if they have any freaking idea what they're doing, should be able to tell you the tax codes in the state. And if you have anything extra to worry about, most of the time when there was something extra that I had to worry about tax-wise, it was included in the table information or in the jury application. So I've never really been blindsided by something last second, except for censorship codes. I've been blindsided by those occasionally. And that's something where talking to artists that have been there before would have saved me. Because I did show up at one convention that didn't have anything listed as far as, like, you know, these things aren't appropriate for your table. And when I got there, they made me put stickers over most of my stuff and had me keep... anything with bad words, I had to put a sticker over the bad words.
Oh.
And anything with sexual themes or what they consider to be adult content, I had to put under the table. And since I didn't know that, I didn't bring like an adults only book. And they let you bring an adults only book, you know, and you're supposed to card people at the table to find out if they're over 18 before you even let them look at the adult book. Had I known all that, I wouldn't have gone. You know, it was pointless.
Like a lot of hassle.
Yep.
It was. And to be blindsided by it was just completely ridiculous. But again, had I talked to anybody, you know, I would have known that ahead of time. It just wasn't really well advertised on the con site. And this was one of the first conventions that I didn't go to the convention a year before I decided to have a table there. So I learned my lesson.
Of course, conventions change from year to year as well. So if you talk to somebody who's been to one... You know, right. Goofy Con or whatever. Well, maybe what they know doesn't count because the people running the con have changed or changed jobs or whatever it is. And then you got somebody running tables or artist alleys that hasn't done it before.
And everything's jacked.
And everything's different. Or they come up with new rules arbitrarily. You never know.
I try to find people who've been there 2 to 3 years in a row because they tend to be a little more... ears up on any kind of changes for the current year. But again, you know, sometimes that's not possible. We've got Denver Comic Con coming this year for the first time. It's a first year con. It's a big deal. Everybody's excited. It could suck. I have no idea. I'm going.
It's harder to tell with the ones that haven't been around for that long.
Yeah, and I cannot really envision a time I would travel out of state for a first year con. That just sounds like a great way to lose money, because I'm not a big boy. You know, questionable content, you know, devil's panties, girls with slingshots. They can kind of show up maybe at a first year con in a new state and not worry about it too much because they know they have hundreds of thousands of fans. Right. But if you're a small player, I wouldn't go to a first year con unless it's in your state or you've got relatives there. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. And know the con that you're going to, as far as if it's an anime convention and you don't have anything close to something that could be passable as manga or anime style, don't go at all. Don't go at all. Unless you're an artist that, I'm going to dig on some of you a little bit, that does really good fan art. And you know you can sell your own art of copyrighted images that you don't own, you know, then maybe go to an anime convention.
Well, and not even necessarily copyright images that you don't own, but if you can do chibi caricatures or whatever else, if you have a skill set that'll work for the con and you have people to room share with and you have people to table share with so that you're not paying full price for it, it might still be worth to you. You know how much you're going to make on sketches. You know, and if you can make table cost and hotel cost on sketches, hey, more power to you. Show up at the con.
Right.
But anime cons for me, I might as well shoot myself in the head. Yeah. It's like that. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. If you don't have stuff that fits at an anime con, I mean, you might as well be trying to sell Beatles stuff at a Justin Bieber concert. You're not going to have any luck with it. You might as well try to ass rape a water buffalo. That ain't going to work out too well either.
So hopefully that's going to work out worse than just trying to.
I mean, I have nothing against people that can do incredible art on their own and they don't have a comic. I do. I mean, it's like some of the fan art I've seen is spectacular. And obviously that does sell to people to young kids with expendable cash at anime conventions. I have serious problems with people selling art of obviously not their work, nor the right to sell art of that work.
You mean stuff they don't draw themselves?
No, I'm talking about the people.
They draw it themselves, but it's not their character.
Yeah, it's highly copyrighted art. And maybe there's rules that allow that, but I kind of doubt it. It's obviously not a governed, the ones I've been to, you'll see Chobits, Fruits Baskets, Pokemon.
Yeah.
You know, things that obviously they don't have a license for, obviously. I'm not really bitter. I just don't think it's fair to people that actually do real original stuff. But of course, that's what a lot of these conventions are. You know, you go and. Even some other cons, you can still get like bootleg DVDs of stuff.
There are though plenty of conventions that, you know, if you're doing other characters, they will come and tell you to knock it off. You know, you're not
depends on the convention
you're not
too.
Do really well sitting at Comic Con drawing Batman characters. You know, those are kind of things that somebody's going to come along and slap you for. You know, unless you're doing if you're doing
one-off stuff.
Then that's okay. If you're doing, you know, I'll draw you as Batman kind of stuff, that's okay. But if you're just drawing Batman, somebody's going to be by.
Like drawing like $5 sketches of whatever or dollar sketch, you know, sketches like that I think you can get away with. But if you have like prints for sale that they're pre-made, they're kind of like there, and that's obviously what you're selling to make money. It depends on the convention. It does depend on the convention if the convention cares enough. Because I've been to conventions and they obviously don't care.
Well, yeah. And we all have. And likewise, I've been to conventions where, you know, there's somebody from you know, the convention at your table saying, excuse me, you don't own this stuff. So, you know, it depends. It depends on the convention. And oftentimes it's going to depend on whether or not it's a merchant's sort of geared convention, or whether it's an artist geared convention. Mm-hmm. Merchant geared conventions tend to notice less, I think. And whereas artist geared conventions tend to be run by artists and they get pissy about things like that. So,
if it comes to that point, you don't argue with the people running the convention. You say, yes, sir, ma'am. And you comply or you get kicked out.
Kick you out and keep your money.
Yep.
And you signed that as an okay when you bought your booth. So, yeah, follow the rules. Know the rules and then follow them. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I'm going to the last convention or expo, honestly, if I'm going to this year, is Minneapolis Indie Expo. It's not a convention, really. It's an expo. Artists buy their tables. People get in for free. You know, there's no door cost. People get in for free to see artists. There's no dealers, which is largely why, you know, the artists pay for their table. But there are some panels that are going on as well. I got a couple of panels. I got a crash course to webcomics, crash course to podcasting, and Mix, man, if you look at the who's exhibiting, there's a lot of web cartoonists from out of state coming in. And this is its second year, and it's huge. They're already going to need a new venue if they want to expand next year. They probably could have expanded this year. They sold out of tables within hours. So that's really cool. If you're going to be in Minneapolis area, come and say hi. I'll give you a business card.
For you to throw away.
Yeah, totally. But next year, I think the first one I'll be going to will be PenguinCon, but likely just as an attendee. What's going to happen with PenguinCon, and we'll let you know. There's several months before then. But I think I'm going to be figuring out what my convention schedule is going to be for next year. I hope to have the first book for Ardra printed up by then. And so at least that. I would like to do something with my other comic. I should just burn a bunch of CDs with maybe I can get a lot of the people from the Webcast Beacon Network, and we'll do like a special sort of This Is Us sort of quick podcast and throw it on a CD for some people. I mean, I got all these CDRs. It's like, you know, I don't use CDs anymore. I don't burn
music. Are they business size or are they regular size? Are they business card size?
For what?
The CDRs.
The CDRs are regular CDRs. I have no use for them, so maybe I could give people a disc if they want to. It's been suggested.
I gotcha.
Just like, but it has to be something special that I can just burn to a disc. It's like, hey, this is our special con. This is who we are thing. You know, just something. I don't know. Just, I gotta get rid of these. I don't use them for anything. Pass on my garbage.
eBay. Here. eBay works.
I forget which comedian it was. It's like, you know, the guy at the corner standing at the corner handing out flyers for something. It's like they're going, here, you throw this away.
Yep, throw this away for me.
Oh, yep.
Actually, I'm doing it again. Jenny Breen made a great deal about flyers, that they're supposed to be, you know, interesting and entertaining and funny, and it should represent you and your comic, and it should be something that people want to keep hold of, obviously.
Right.
But the other great thing about putting a comic on a flyer is that you can put it up over the urinals in the men's room and on the back of the ladies' room, like, stall doors. Because people are standing there, they're a captive audience, and they'll read your comic. And as long as you have your booth number at the bottom, they'll know where to come see you after they've read it.
There you go.
Works really well. One of the best things I bought was one of those little stamps. It's a just an ink stamp, but where you can change what it says. You add in, you know, your own letters and numbers. Hmm. Because then I don't have to write that shit on 3,000 flyers. I just clunk. Anyway.
Now for, I think, to wrap up this show, do you know of any, online resources for getting con related, tools or such things that, You know what I'm saying? Just things that you would need for, like, going to a convention or places for resources to get, unless it's just, like, go to your local Office Depot or something.
You know, unfortunately, I haven't really found anything that was decent. A lot of it is just sort of, like, slapdash, weird merchandise sort of crammed together. Most of your convention type, you know, merchandise things online are going to be for trade conventions, and not so much creator oriented conventions. I haven't really found anything good. So mostly what I've done is just talk to people and found out, you know, when you're at a convention, we all go to them too, you know, and as you're walking around, if somebody has a really cool display, say, hey, where did you get that?
Right.
Most of the best displays I've seen were made at, you know, Home Depot. you know, plumber's pipe is your friend.
There's a website I found. I'll try to find the right link for it, but I think it was called Displays to Go with a letter two. They usually sell, like, whole boxes of stuff. It's like, you know, it's like there's, like, these little metal wire things, that props that hold up your comic. Book holders, Mark. they were really, really cheap. You had to buy, like, a box of 12, but they came out to be, like, a dollar something each. Ridiculously cheap. I mean, you could buy one, but there's then the fee for just opening up the box, like a restock fee or something like that. So you might as well just buy the whole thing. They had a lot of options as far as, well, displays go. I got some great eight business card holders. Like, you know, they hold eight business cards.
Right. Because you're the only comicer that would ever need that.
Yeah. But something like that would be cool if you're part of, like a group, like a collective, and you want to, and you have, like, you know, there it is. They're all in one spot. They take up, you know, just things like that. Things you can get creative with. Things you can invest in. I'll try to find that link. And if anybody's listening knows of any great resources, and that you can attest to, you know, post a comment on this show's episode post and share that information and help others. You know, that's the best way, you know. People recommending word of mouth.
I usually look at restaurant supply.
Restaurant supply
companies, especially local ones.
Really?
Yeah, because they have all the same sort of, you know, when you go to, like, a mom and pop restaurant, they'll have, like, the little magazine holder, but they're using it to hold menus, or they'll have, you know, those kind of things. You can find a lot of those at restaurant supplies, and you can find a lot of things also that you can repurpose. Condiment trays work really well for buttons. You know, things like that. So restaurant supply has been good to me.
Sweet.
Keep in mind, you're going to have to ship all this crap wherever you're going. So don't get the thing that doesn't take apart or that, you know, fits awkwardly in any suitcase or, you know, is going to cause your suitcase to be searched at friggin' airports.
Ship or lug.
Which, by the way, long-handed staples, they'll get your bag searched every time.
What kind of staples?
The long-handled staplers that you use for, like, stapling mini-comics.
Yeah. Okay.
Every single airport checkpoint that I went through with that got my bag searched every time.
And so,
like a weapon, x-ray.
Yeah.
They just don't know what the hell it is.
Yeah, for those, make sure that something like that is, they don't have to dig too much to find.
Mm. Yeah, put weird shit on top.
Yep. And
things
maybe
that are collapsible, easily packable, just for quick and easy packing and unpacking.
I've never been on a plane. I have no advice for.
I have good advice for planes too. I'm also a big fan of you know, as far as, like, the magazine holders and thing, I'm a big fan of the cardboard ones because you can unfold them and they go flat. And when you have, like, the big pull suitcases, they usually have that netting part in the lid that kind of makes no sense. It works really well for putting all those that's where I put all my foldable file boxes and all the cardboard display stuff goes in there.
Get one of those, you could get or even make your own, those plate holders. You know, they just fold out at a 90-degree angle, and you stick a plate on there. That'd work for a book, wouldn't it?
Yep, I know a lot of people use them.
Depends. I was using picture frame holders, which you could kind of put a plate in there. But, I wouldn't recommend the fold-out picture frame holders. The plate holders probably have a little bit more space.
Yeah, they're designed to hold different sizes of plates, too, anything from platters. They're a little differently built, but, yeah.
As far as... thinking about if you can't be driving, if you can get at least one other person that's going to be like maybe going to the same convention as you, the thing with driving versus a plane, it's if you have the time, if the time works out, but if you can't get a second person, that really helps with gas, and then of course there's some share a hotel room sort of thing, But you also got to be mindful about the amount of space that's in your vehicle and make sure that.
Oh yeah.
And then there's with shipping concerns. You got to think. Well, if you do know somebody in another state, if you can ship to them instead, and maybe not worry about the hassle, which we've brought up a lot of times, where Tanya has told the story of people crying at conventions
Comic-Con
because
was
yeah
the big one.
Because the shipments all were very very
delayed. They charge an arm and a leg. Imagine having to pay for tables and chairs
you
and electricity, all that stuff.
$600 for a table and your merchandise doesn't show. That hurts hard. I mean, plus you flew out there and you've got the hotel costs and you made up all this extra merch, because if you're going to Comic-Con you made up a lot of crap.
You have to if the tables are that pricey.
Well, yeah. And Jesus. You know that there's also 80,000 people there. It's not like your little local con where 800 people show up. You need to have enough merchandise to
go
to
around.
Sell.
Yeah.
And it doesn't show. Yeah, that hurts hard. That's the other. I always bring a carry-on. In my carry-on, I have one of everything that I have to sell. And, some means of taking orders. And I've never had the disaster where I had to take orders for stuff, because people aren't really going to want to do that. They want to leave with something in their hands. But at least then I feel like, hey, my crap didn't show, but here's what I had to sell. If you want it, I'll make you a deal on shipping or whatever else. You know, you might have a way to mitigate that a little bit, but that's just paranoia. You can also ship to the hotel you're staying at. Just call the hotel and let them know that you're going to have a shipment there the day before, and ship it out.
There are options.
Yes.
And as far as a really great option that's actually picking up a lot of steam, you can accept credit card payments. If you have a smartphone and if there's a connection, a wireless or 3G, 4G connection at the convention that you're at, go to squareup.com.
Hell yes.
It's free to get this little piece that plugs into your phone. Obviously there's a percentage that they'll take.
Which is less than PayPal.
Which is less than PayPal, unless you got a micropayments account.
different.
But the thing is that dealing with just swiping a card at a convention is a lot better than asking, hey, do you have a PayPal app on your phone or something like that, which is also another option. I mean, there is a PayPal app. People can pay you at PayPal at conventions. But a lot of people are going to have a credit card.
Yeah. Or a debit card
or something
you can swipe. And for every person that stops by your table and says, oh, you know, I just spent the last of my cash, you can go, hey, that's okay. I take credit cards. And a lot of times that guilts people into buying something.
Yeah.
Because they gave you their bullshit excuse and it didn't work, and now they have to cover their ass.
Yep. Probably shouldn't take checks. I don't think anybody takes checks anymore. Checks are
actually
very insecure.
If you have an automatic deposit app, like if you go through a bank that'll let you take a picture of the check and it'll automatically deposit that, I wouldn't mind.
Chase has that now.
Yeah, if I can take a picture and it'll, because they verify funds before it will, deposit.
Yeah.
That's a possibility, but still, yeah, screw that. Give me a card, give me cash.
Paper or plastic?
I don't work on promises.
Yeah. And that comes to the end of the show. This is a full-length episode of the Webcomic Beacon with lots of great information. Sorry it wasn't as entertaining as you know, because, you know, Tanya's running the show, and there's very little I can screw up.
Oh, but you try so hard.
I do. You know, I wake up early. I wake up early every night so that I can just practice being me.
You do so good.
Practice being you.
Yes.
The role of a lifetime, isn't it?
Actually, it doesn't really take that much effort.
Go figure. If it did, there'd be a bigger problem.
There, but anyway, so so that was our show on conventions, and not speaking of conventions, there is the 4th anniversary special of the Webcomic Beacon podcast coming up December 4th. Go to webcastbeacon.com/giveaways for some information on how to enter to win some giveaways of printed versions of people's webcomics that they have submitted for review and for to be given away at the 4th anniversary special. It looks like we're going to have some people from the Funny Music Project. I think Devo Spice and the Great Luke Ski will be on. I don't know if they're performing, but I'm going to be interviewing people from the FUMP. And... And it sounds like we're going to have at least one stripper on the show. Skipper does a webcomic called Pink Parts. And so I'm throwing that out there. Don't know what else we're going to do, but you can check that out at webcastbeacon.com/giveaway or giveaways.
That's anyway, the day before my somethingth anniversary.
It's December 4th is when it is, so there's some time.
That's the day before my anniversary.
Huzzah! Well, double celebration. Awesome.
I can't remember which one it is, though. It's a somethingth anniversary.
There's a something anniversary, but you can't remember what it is. Well,
no, it's my I don't know, relationship anniversary. We're not married, so... relationship-y anniversary. I don't remember how many years.
It's a toleration anniversary. You've put up with me for the...
That's so hard.
Well, maybe that's just what I do. Anyway, jeez. So that's the end of... That's the end... Well, she's putting up with me, so congratulations.
Yay! Rapture and Fest.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember when our... She knows the date. I don't remember the date. I think she said it was April 9th. Well, because we've had a sort of, like, are we, aren't we, on and off sort of thing, so I'm not counting all that, so we're going back, I think we go back to our first date, which you remember, so it might be 3 years this coming April, but that's a...
Yeah, we kind of did our first datey thing, too, because it was weird.
First datey thing.
Yeah.
It was a weird circumstance.
I know.
So...
So anyway, we have, that is it for the Webcomic Beacon. Thank you all for coming. I have been, and will always be, unfortunately, Fess from PSIWebcomic.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesandShipProductions.com.
And this is Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Tweeted.
You twat.
It's twatted.
You twat, did you?